Welcome to the One Within All to another Interverse podcast. I'm your host, Chance. And in case you forgot, I'd like to remind you that the universe is comprised of energy, frequency, and vibration, which means the only thing you really have any control over is your vibe. And whether you're in a state of enlightened bliss or surfing some dissonant waves right now, keep listening because this episode is sure to be complimentary to the cultivation of more coherent consciousness. Although some of these ideas are firmly entrenched in the New Age lexicon and often mixed up in nonsensical word salads from multitudes of Instagram influencers and TikTok tastemakers, the truth is exactly as I've just said. Your body and mind exist as an expression of a toroidal energy plasma that electromagnetically interacts with the various nested levels of similar fields across every dimensional scale of reality. Or in other words, you really are the entire ocean in a drop. And as we know, sometimes the waters of life get a bit muddled, polluted by our tendency to set and forget beliefs and expectations about life, ourselves, and the world, as well meaning but misguided efforts to stave off disappointment by entraining ourselves to expect the worst and avoid hard feelings at all costs. These compartmentalized whirlpools of stagnant life force that result from our attempts to separate ourselves from accepting the present moment are, in my opinion, not just a negative influence on our health and wealth, they are the primary, if not only, cause of disease, injury, and severely unfun life experiences. And the first step to turning it around is knowing that life isn't happening to you, you're happening to life. Regular listeners know that there's a solution to even the most rigidly cemented, unbalanced chi, and in fact, there are many ways to achieve the psycho-energetic surgical soul retrievals that synthesize our subtle self stuff and integrate our vital forces. For me, the tools are tuning forks and tarot cards in my humble one-man operation, but our guest today, Keith Parker, has bigger dreams when it comes to spreading the gospel of growth and scripture of sentience. As the host of the Field Dynamics podcast, teacher of energy healing modalities, and practitioner of pranic processes, Keith is doing more than his share of making sure more people are using and being helped by the universal gift that we all possess, the power of energetic medicine. I, for one, can't wait to mix it up with Keith and learn more about what he's been doing and Field Dynamics. But before we begin, make sure you check out the episode description for links on how to support the podcast. You can get this shirt I'm wearing right now at interversemerch.com, links to contact me or Keith directly for our respective services, and a lot more. So now it's time to get our frequency on and amplify our awareness with the Field Dynamics founder and transformative teacher of the ether, Keith Parker. Welcome to Interverse, man, and thanks for being here.
Thank you, Chance. So glad to have the opportunity to be here. And that was an amazing intro. I feel like that was the cosmic energy healing world version of like a boxing match when they do those huge intros and, you know, the fighter comes in with the stuff on their back and the cool music coming on. I think that was amazing. So
gotta gas them up, man. Gotta get everybody ready. Hey, but what would you add to that? Tell us about who you are, how you got to this point in the present moment.
Well, you said so much in there, especially that first paragraph or two about the deeper nature of what's going on, and that we tend to not realize that. So we have this presumption that reality, that our identity, that selfhood is a particular thing, and it seems a particular way. So we assume that that's what it is. But what spiritual traditions are all about, mysticism, healing work, awakening, subtle energy, multidimensionality, all this stuff, is starting to look and pick apart what is it like when you start to kind of become a scientist of the inner world, of the things unseen, of the metaphysical. And only so many people are going to be interested in that. You know, that's fair. It's not about this being the requirement that people need to do this kind of inner work or have curiosity there. But for those who do, and who have done it for a long period of time, and I mean thousands of years and lots of cultures, there's a lot of wisdom that we've lost contact with. And I think, Chance, you're doing an amazing job just with that intro. There's this thing where we want to kind of emerge out of the word salad, as you kind of called it, I think, where there's a lot of mixed messaging, a lot of confusion, a lot of things that are really ungrounded and truly reasonably pointed out as woo-woo, and to sift through all of that and realize that the core message behind all of those things are actually pointing at something real, something true, and maybe the most valuable, the most relevant, the truest truth that could be called true, that there is. And it's potentially really important for us to take that seriously. So how did I get here? That's a long story or a short one. But at the moment, I'm going to start now and then reverse maybe or jump back to the beginning. What I do is I teach people how to practice energy healing, and that's through this modality that I've co-created called field dynamics. And a lot of people out there will be familiar with energy healing practices, modalities, if you will. I like to kind of differentiate between different things because there's a lot of things that have energetic effects. Like you mentioned, tuning forks and tarot cards, and these are wonderful tools and have energetic effects when you use them. But generally speaking, I try and differentiate this thing called maybe classical energy healing, if you will. Reiki, for instance, is the most popular, well-known form of that out there. And this works where you're learning to kind of tap into the singularity of consciousness or the levels of consciousness in which invocation, intention, imagination is even a word that is kind of connected to that, where you learn to tap into how it is that these deeper levels of reality, our aura, multidimensionality, levels of consciousness and identity, how they can actually be spoken to, and that you can engineer or create change at particular levels in particular ways that are very effective for healing. And energy work is kind of the high level art form of doing it in a very pure manner, where it's field to field, it's energy to energy. There's nothing physical that you start with when you do classical energy work. You're working with, you could say it goes from mind to spirit, back to mind, and then it makes its way to body, if you will, if you do the mind, body, spirit kind of connection. And so what I'm doing, what I'm dedicating myself to, and what Field Dynamics is a platform, a modality, a training program, an experience for people to learn this healing art form that is really powerful, really, really dynamic and broad in a way that a lot of the offerings out there in the word salad world are not really meeting that standard of being grounded, being organized, having clear language, understanding the mechanism behind all of this, because this stuff is really, really relevant. So I do that because I do this practice in particular because my own personal journey brought me into this very strange, unexpected, I would never have thought that this would have happened in a million years, that I see auras really clearly. I feel the field really clearly in myself. And that came as a byproduct of doing all these other spiritual practices and healing practices where I had some really big shifts in my perception over time, step by step, little by little. And then I had an explosive kind of change in which all of a sudden, the chakras and the meridians and auras and multiple dimensions and entities and beings and levels of reality that I thought didn't even exist, all of a sudden became entirely transparent and interactable in a conscious way for me. And that required me to completely go back in and reconsider everything about myself, my belief systems, my presumptions about reality, et cetera. And here I am about almost 9 years after that big transformational event where I'm teaching an energy healing modality, because I kind of see the mechanics behind all of this, and therefore gives me the ability to kind of create tools and engineering or healing techniques that make use of this insight. That's where I'm going to start.
There's so much there, man. I have a tendency to just go straight for the deep end. So maybe we should talk about that a little more. The ability to see and engage the dynamics of the human energy field and all the various things that are part of that invisible spectrum. So for me, I operated for a while on the idea that the chakras, for example, or the biofield, the anatomy of the energy field, what stuck energy in a certain place tends to represent, that was a language, is how I saw it at first, a language, so thus conceptual. And just because it's conceptual doesn't mean it can have some influence on something real, which is consciousness or how we feel and how things express in our body and in our life. But as I've gone forward, I see it more like there's a there, you know, it's not strictly just conceptual. It's almost like, yes, it is a language, but it's different from our use of language as we communicate in a more broad and complex sense, that in terms of the language that we're talking about with chakras and meridians and the energy centers of the body, it's as if we had a language where the sound that was coming out of our mouth to describe the thing was universally the true sound that actually corresponded to that thing. And that's an analogy. I'm not saying that the names of the chakras are necessarily a universal vibration that fits what it is it's describing. I don't know that our language is at that level. Maybe in some ways it is, but maybe in some other ways it isn't. But in terms of what it's describing, it's just as real, that it's beyond just a concept. So I wonder if you could riff on that, like what do you think about what I'm saying there?
Yeah, absolutely. And for one, you know, when you're talking about the idea that what you could vocalize could be correlated to the actual vibrational resonance of the thing itself, it's almost like if you said there are these other realms that's vibrational and frequency oriented, and then if you could actually like use a universal translator as though that vibration had a language and then put it through the human system and vocalize it, there are cultures that have tried to do this, or practices that have tried to do this. So Sanskrit tends to be one that a lot of people point to, that Sanskrit itself is a like a translational vibrational language, as would Hebrew. And there's a lot of reasons why that might be the case. That's not my area of expertise, but nonetheless, getting to the concreteness of the energy system. So some people say chakras and all this stuff, it's metaphorical. Like it's an allegory, representational, as you said. And in fact, I've really been surprised at how often I have come across teachers who say these are just abstractions that represent things. You know, they're like representative to archetypes and things like that. And I would have bought that a long time ago. However, I can see and feel these things as an objective reality, as something that they actually exist, they concretely exist. What people... There's this distinction, and the first distinction that needs to be made, and that is that we have a material body, and that material body is made of matter, and matter begins with, you could look at it from the, you know, periodic table of elements, like starting with hydrogen, or then you can go to atoms and look at protons, neutrons, electrons, et cetera, subatomic particles, et cetera. But matter is where science focuses, and it's measurable in a particular way. And there's levels at which it's predictable, and then there are levels in which it gets so small that it becomes just probabilities, probabilistic fields, like in quantum mechanics. So this distinction, to understand the differential between the material world and what we see as physical with our eyes in general and feel with, you know, our body and our senses, the distinction is simply the simple one, at least the easy pivot, is to electromagnetic phenomena. And electromagnetic phenomena is not matter. You know, electromagnetism is not material. Electromagnetism refers to what we tend to think of as the phenomena of light. And light is, even to get really kind of crazy, you said go deep fast, but you have to tease out the fact that light itself is the phenomena that underlies what we call time and space. So once you start to go, okay, I have a material body. Do I have an electromagnetic body? Is there something about me that's electromagnetic that is either conjoined with the physical body, like running in parallel, or in a certain sense is separate, but happens to be conjoined with it while this physical body is around? Those are two different ways of thinking about it. But is there an electromagnetic aspect at all functioning in relation to the body? This is where all of these traditions, all clairvoyance, all of these psychic abilities, all of this energy work, all the chakras, for instance, 100% have to do with understanding the difference between matter and electromagnetic phenomena. And electromagnetic fields, of course, are light fields. And this is why in every spiritual tradition you'll see around the world, they talk about light. I mean, there's a big emphasis in the idea of light all the time. It's called the light body in a lot of different traditions. And this is the starting point to see, oh, here's the simple differentiation for what we call matter and material and what science is focused on. And then this other thing, which is called the aura or the electromagnetic field, and where things like chakras and metaphysics and energy work and all these kinds of esoteric planes of reality and consciousness have to do with. And once you make that initial divide, then you start to become clear. Whether or not you believe that's true is one thing, but at least understand that's the division between the two, right? And what can happen, okay, what a mystic, let's say, a person, well, like myself, what happened to me is that there are classically described these structures which inhibit the human being from being able to see this stuff, because it exists in an objective, concrete manner. But we have these, basically, we have like frequency fences or things that inhibit our perceptual ability to see this level clearly. And these are described in the Kundalini tradition really clearly. The structures are called granthis. We could have a whole conversation about Kundalini and Kundalini process and awakening and all that kind of stuff. Again, a huge amount of word salad and misinformation in that world. But nonetheless, what's understood really clearly from the yogic tradition, as well as certain other ones, is that when you open up certain centers, when you open up certain aspects of, like, it's like breaking down a firewall, if you think of it in terms of the internet, right? You all of a sudden just gain access to all this other information. You know, it just becomes transparent and open. And that's what happened to me, where really dramatically, in the course of one evening, literally, I went from a stepwise gradational change over the course of 5 years of really intense inner work, practice, meditation, etc., of getting more and more subtle in my perception of what was happening in myself and healing work with other people. And then overnight, it just exploded into, oh my God, chakras are 100% perceivable. All the meridians are, I can feel them through my body entirely. And a lot of other very strange and esoteric phenomena that I had to start to deal with and make sense of because of this other objective reality. Another thing that's really important is the groundwork, because I want to try to monitor myself about how long I go on for, right? But another really important thing to realize in the groundwork for these things is that thoughts are things. So people go, okay, great, chakras, those are something like energy anatomy. They structure your field in a particular way. But those are universal. Everybody has chakras. And in fact, we could get really, again, really down and dirty with strange kinds of considerations that even like every molecule actually would have like a chakra, for instance. Every stone you see has a chakra. Every animal has it. They have a chakra system in a sense. The chakras are an ordering matrix to how the field has different layers or strata, or there's a hierarchical structuring. That's the world of multidimensionality. I'm sure we're not going to be able to avoid getting into that in this talk. But in terms of what's happening in your field, what does the field contain? That's what's most prevalent, most pressing to all of us in terms of our day-to-day lives in every moment. What your field is doing is it's literally a screen or a projection or a representation or literally the structure of what your mind is doing in each and every moment. So every thought that you have has an electromagnetic structure in multiple dimensions. Every emotion you have has an electromagnetic structure that has its own formation within your field. And what our mind is doing, you could make this argument, I think it's really reasonable, although it does push people's button quite quickly, is that if there is a structure of the mind, what it is your aura is the actual structure of the mind. And I don't even mean your mind, the mind, because again, there's this hierarchy in the structuring of your aura. And the hierarchy has to do with inclusivity of identity as you go into higher and higher domains. And that will not be understandable to certain people. Other people will really get what I'm saying. But we don't understand what the mind is. People think that this is some kind of, hey, yeah, the mind is your brain. You know, like there's this thing now that's happened. People go, my brain is not really working well today, as though your brain is your mind, or my brain isn't thinking well today, as though your brain is the thing that thinks, right? That is not some kind of decided upon, validated, scientifically accurate suggestion. Not at all. There has never been any study in the history of neuroscience that's ever said that there's a thought that's been found in the body or the brain. There's no such thing. There's no evidence. It's purely theoretical. But what's happened is we've taken on the
material.
Let's
add memory to that too. Let's add memory to what you're saying. There's no filing cabinet of cells that's ever been opened in the brain. And they said, okay, here's what happened on Tuesday, March 13th in 1972, right? There's no such thing. Memory is part of this field too. The mind and memory are this fluid dynamic field.
100% memory, all of the things that we would call the contents of the mind, which is thought, memory, creativity, emotions, even, although emotions are probably a little bit more complex, or they have a dual nature in terms of having a certain purchase on the body, the way I would define and describe emotion. But nonetheless, this is an unanswered question. This is just, it's just one of these things where I'm so interested in this dialogue where, you know, you said we have a podcast called the Field Dynamics Podcast. I just spoke to a scientist from IONS, which is a cutting edge research institute in California that studies consciousness. You know, they have Dean Radin as the head there, and he's like one of the primary authors in the world of psi phenomena and taking that into laboratory and trying to understand paranormal psi phenomena, et cetera. And, you know, it was like, if we don't understand what reality is, right? And science is the thing that we now do in the 20th century, 21st century, we now go, hey, science, tell me what the truth is. That's what we do. Hey, science, tell me what the truth is. I don't know what it is. Science has to tell me what it is. Okay. If science's model of what's real, of what reality is, which is called materialism right now, which says that the mind is built from matter, right? It's matter first, mind second, and then there's no such thing as spirit. If you just look at it, mind, body, spirit, let's say. If that's not correct, then that means our entire premise of what reality is entirely flawed. It just means we're 100% incorrect. And if we're 100% incorrect of our model of reality, then that means every presumption we have about what's going on is potentially incorrect from the ground up. So if we move forward, if we make decisions, if we have society, if we have belief structures, if we have family, if we have ambitions, everything, literally, the results of what our civilization as a whole does and what every individual does is predicated upon our collective belief system to a degree. And if that's incorrect, then that means that it doesn't matter how good our intentions may be. We might literally be doing everything going in the completely wrong direction. So I don't think there's a more pressing question, and people don't realize. I'm trying to tap the person on the shoulder and say like, hey, mind is not a decided upon thing. Science has no idea, absolutely no idea what the mind is whatsoever. If you think that that's something that's been proven in some way, you are not up to date on any of the literature out there, and you haven't talked to any humble neuroscientist. There's no such thing as saying a thought is coming from your brain. There's nothing whatsoever that makes that. That's called a leap of faith to make that suggestion. It's 100% theoretical, philosophical, mystical hoping from a scientist to say that, because there's no data that would suggest as such. The only thing that you can say at this point is we understand that there's a correlation. There's a correlation between the types of thoughts or the types of mental functioning people have and what's happening physiologically. Now, a correlation, it does in no way crystallizes the actual content of the person's experience or specify specifically what they're thinking. It just is correlated to types of thought and things like that. That's as close as you get to having any verifiability. So that I wanted to get out. And what's the reflection from that, Chance?
There's this thing that goes on with science where they pretend like, I say they, I don't want to be, I'm not trying to sound judgmental, but it is what it is. People's viewpoint of science, I'll say that, where they think there's these experts out there, they've got everything figured out. They told me the story and I just need to know these couple details. And that's what I base my entire system of belief about what life is, what reality is upon. But what is lost on practically everybody is that those cosmogonies that they've been provided by their teachers or by TV scientists, Neil deGrasse Tyson, these types, that dogma is identical to the mystery school doctrines. There's very little that science has put out there in terms of origin stories of the big questions of life that is in any way different from what the philosophers of the ancient world were saying. Just like the Big Bang theory, that's Brahma creating the cosmic egg, or Kronos creating the cosmic egg, and then the universe comes out of it. You know, the single point of all matter and energy in existence compressed down into this hyper dense thing that then explodes. That's the cosmic egg. I mean, it's no different at all, and that applies to practically everything in science. And then some of it actually becomes a bit dangerous, like evolution, for example. The way most people think about it may seem innocent and all that. I'm not here to tell someone what to believe, but the result of how most people conceive of evolution is essentially removing the idea of the creative intelligence, or what people call God, from the equation, but removing it from the equation from the present moment, but putting it at the end of the line, and it becomes your future self. But it's this exact thing that happens across the spectrum from economics to this evolution thing I'm describing. It's selling out the present moment for the promise of a better future. But if your entire premise is incorrect of the idea of a future existing, then you're just making the present moment worse without, you know, the ends justify the means, just makes the present moment worse. And if there's actually no such thing in the future, there's just the moment, then we've messed up. You know, so like, this is how, these are the type of things that if your fundamental foundational things of what you believe life and reality to be are flawed, then you'll start making really goofy mistakes that, like you said, take you in the wrong direction, and perpetually so.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say, for one, I'm not science bashing whatsoever. I'm very pro science. And in fact, I think everything phenomenologically we can describe about the deeper insights about the energy field and consciousness itself, actually, there's already scientific language in place to understand all of these things very, very clearly. In fact, it's the conclusions and the inferences and extrapolations that the scientific community at the moment is not really willing to go to. But I think that we're in a sea change, and we're going to be experiencing, or are already experiencing, the front end of paradigm shift. So pretty much, you know, everything kind of what happens in science, there's a very famous author, Thomas Kuhn, The Nature of Scientific Revolutions. And the idea in that book, which he describes, is just simply, if you look over any time scale within the scientific world, once it's kind of, it's had its inception, there's always a paradigm shift. And what tends to happen is every paradigm shift basically becomes the inversion of the previous paradigm. So what everybody thinks is true for a particular period of time, 50 years, 100 years, 200 years, what tends to happen is something happens. There's some kind of large phase shift in the understanding of what they're studying, and the presumptions in that particular paradigm literally get turned inside out, where they find out that the premise is fundamentally flawed, and they wind up inverting it, just like turning a timekeeping device upside down. It goes in the other direction entirely. And so what we've done is we've taken all of this wisdom that we've accrued over thousands of years from all these different traditions about the nature of reality. We've inserted science about, you know, functionally really only for the last 150 years in terms of Darwinian science and materialism being something that you could kind of stake your claim in terms of modernity. And everybody just goes, a lot of people just go, oh, right. Because all the spiritual and religious traditions of the world are just based in stupidity, primitivism, not understanding anything, and basically power structures to maintain, you know, priests and and temples and churches to control other people, et cetera. And one version or another of that tends to be what people think of religion and spirituality who are disconnected from it and take on the scientific perspective. But what they don't realize in general is, number one, science has grown into a monster unto itself in that it has become as dogmatic as any kind of criticism you could suggest onto any kind of religious structure that existed in the past. It's extremely dogmatic now. You are not allowed to say certain things and be considered credible. If you are in faculties and, you know, where science, you know, thrives in academia, et cetera, where professors have to work off of grants and maintain tenure, you're not allowed to go against the stream about things that are considered taboo. And if you do, you're going to be ostracized and thrown out in the very same way that if somebody was heretical in the past about their religious platform that they were involved with and they said something counter to those communities, those people would be tarred and feathered or thrown in a fire, et cetera. The same kind of thing is happening in a different way now. And people don't realize that science has become a form of religion in a sense, as the same attributes as religion used to have, where religion obviously fell short of its potential, which is its primary kernel of spirituality itself, which is what connects all the different religions, in my opinion, which would be the singular truth or the singular insight that connects all of these things. So that's really important. I want to clarify that I am 100% a fan of and think science is a wonderful vehicle for change and transformation and will continue to be. It's just that we have to continue to soften the edges of its own rigidity to allow for conversations and research and insight to be happening where they have their blind spots right now. And I do think that we are in a paradigm shift where inevitably, because of the very cutting edge research that's going on right now, the things that have happened in the last 10 to 20 years in science are ahead of the curve. When you take those insights off of some primary pieces of information, which we could talk about, if you extrapolate the those findings where they kind of infiltrate and penetrate the mainstream thinking in scientific communities, in another 10 or 20 years, we might already be steeped in another paradigm. It's very possible.
I have a question, actually. Do you think that the wall that science is having trouble getting past is the possibility that our beliefs and expectations about life and reality are so influential on what we observe that we may actually have reached a threshold that the scientific method becomes limited compared to what we used to think its ability to discern truth was? You know what I mean?
I think that there's a danger in thinking that the scientific method can verify or validate within its own parameters the essence of reality itself. And this has to do with the fundamental precept of all spiritual traditions. It's what you have talked about multiple times in your intro and the Brahma seed and beginning of the universe, etc. Fundamentally, if people want to just realize this inversion point that I was talking about, what's it like to take something and turn it inside out? Well, right now we're in a belief structure of materialism, which means that matter is the primacy of existence and everything that exists that doesn't seem material comes from material. That's the premise of materialism. Mind comes from matter is the premise there. Everything previous to this scientific age said the opposite, which is that consciousness itself and mind creates matter, which is the inversion, right? And there are different levels to inspection here, which is what is mind, right? There's the body part, which is matter, which is kind of easy to account for at this point to a degree. There's an agreed upon sense there. Mind is very confusing to people. Ask a person walking down the street, what's your mind? What's your mind? You know, you want to really confuse somebody, just ask them, so what's your mind? That's really a challenging question for most people. And how about this one? Where is your mind? That's a really, really interesting question. So these kinds of questions are really perplexing to most people. And what they'll do is generally defer to, oh, well, science has it figured out, don't they? I'm not a scientist. I don't know how to answer that. No, science has no idea what it is. I've been saying that, you know, at the beginning, science has no idea what the mind is whatsoever. And then when you distill that down, you say, what's consciousness itself? You know, this is the forsaken land. You know, this is like you're not allowed. People try in science to answer this question, but fundamentally, all the traditions describe that what we could call God or the divine or the transcendent or Brahma, et cetera, doesn't matter what the words are, is that there is a beingness or an isness or an essence or a singular nature or a unified nature or an eternal nature or an infinite nature, lots of different words, and it can get even confusing when you sift through those, but that there's a singularity from which all everything else we see springs forth from, where mind would spring forth from no mind and matter would spring forth from no matter. And I was really intrigued because I very often refer to what's known as the amplitahedron. Maybe you've heard of this. The amplitahedron is a research piece that came out of the Large Hadron Collider. So for people who like science and cutting edge science, you know, the Large Hadron Collider is the biggest particle accelerator mankind's ever made. And one of the things they found there, very cutting edge physics, was a discovery of what they call the amplitahedron. And what the amplitahedron is, it is a structure that exists outside of time and space, from which all of time and space are an emergent property of. And they found this by taking protons, exploding them into one another, and then following the little pieces, basically, of the protons as they break apart into subatomic particles and smaller and smaller and smaller. And if you follow those into breaking into smaller and smaller pieces all the way to the Planck scale, which is the smallest unit of time and space, which is extremely small, what they found is you can track matter back to its very source. And when they cross that event horizon into a space that's supposed to be outside of time and space, where time and space don't exist, yet something crosses that threshold, what they found is there was a shape, and that shape was a geometric form that was outside of time and space. And it was proven, and it created a lot of ease within a lot of calculus communities, high-level mathematical communities, this thing called the amplitahedron. Now, that happened in like 2015, and forever I've been going, that's a really, really big deal. It's a very interesting one for various reasons. And just recently, I heard a scientist talk about how the most important thing going on in the physics and science community in general for the past 10 years has been what's going on outside of time and space. Now, I'm not a physicist, and I'm not a scientist, and I'm not in academia. I'm not in those circles. I don't talk to those people a lot. But this guy who was steeped in it hardcore was saying, that's the buzz. That's what's been going on now for like a decade, is everybody's going, forget about time and space. What's outside of time and space? So to connect that back into what you said, the Big Bang, the beginning, right? Where is time and space here? Well, when you say time, we go, okay, what's the beginning of time? You have the Big Bang is what science says is the beginning of time. Okay, so can you yourself contact or connect or transcend the parameters of time and space from your own direct experience? You know, that's a great question. Most people go, what are you even talking about? That's really abstract, right?
I would say, yeah, actually, you can.
100%. And that's
100%. The weird thing is that it's temporary, though. But like, I know from my personal experience, I've had moments that lasted longer than the time should have lasted. Like, reality caught in a little miniature loop around me, and I could stay in that moment as long as I wanted, until I was ready to leave it. And it was definitely like a frequency thing, hard to describe. Yeah. We don't have good language for that, but we're talking about this singularity that everything emerges from. That's why I like to reverse engineer the mystery tradition, because I think they knew what they were talking about. The cosmic egg or related types of cosmogonies. We're not saying that this happened at in the beginning moment on a timeline. It's trying to communicate that this is every moment eternally present, constantly happening, right?
Right, exactly. This is right. We're not talking about something that's temporary. It's not something that's temporal. It's not spatial. It's not transient. It doesn't begin and it doesn't end, because it is transcendent of what we call time and space. Time and space is where things are created and they arise and they fall away. They begin and they end. When you get to atemporal things, which is outside of time and space, which is what the amplitahedron is proving, that there are things outside of time and space, which is what every mystical tradition is talking about, all spirituality is talking about, what is pointed at is the word God in general, which is what I myself have know directly and have broken through lots of limiting barriers of perception to be able to experience myself and understand, and we could talk about those mystical traditions and how it's mapped out really clearly, that that's not a, to access that, if you will, is not to access something temporary. It's actually to realize what always is and always will be, right? So it doesn't, it's more like what you're doing is with music, you're going from hearing the melody, which is built upon harmony, which is built upon rhythm, which is built upon silence. And the spiritual quest, if you will, to realize the silence is that you actually have to mute, in a sense. You have to quiet the mind and realize that everything is arising from nothing or silence or a singular point at which there is no sound, there is no movement, there is no vibration, if you will. There's no form, there's no time, there's no space. And that's not that, whilst there are peak experiences people have where they feel like they contact that and then they lose it, it's actually not something that ever goes away, like you're saying. So people have to realize there's this concurrent simultaneity between what is temporal spatial, time space, and then what is atemporal, meaning the thing which transcends that, which is omnipresent. Right. So that's what often is being referred to when we say, like, we bring up this insistence of nowness, or it's always the present, you know, somebody like Eckhart Tolle, the power of now, it's always now, it's eternally now, that kind of stuff. It's simple language that points us in that direction. But in general, this is something that can be known directly. And I would say classically, and my specialization, if you will, the language I can use because the maps are very rigorous and because my own experience maps onto this very, very well, are from the yogic and the Buddhist communities and how they've described advanced states of meditation, what are called jhana and samadhi, and then how that actually maps onto more esoteric traditions' description of the chakra system, the energy system, multiple dimensions, Kundalini traditions, et cetera. And that these maps line up perfectly 100%. They're usually not connected, but they have a one-to-one correlation and understanding how a person experiences this movement from going from the perception of being a physical body and a personality through breaking down these frequency fences or these firewalls in which their perception opens up dramatically into realizing the essence of what is here and now and what their identity actually is at base.
It's really tantalizing stuff to get into, man. I want to do a bit of a pivot, though, and talk about, you know, bring it back down to earth a little bit. Talk sure. About your work with, I want you to talk about your work with field dynamics as an energy healing practitioner. It would be great if within the scope of this first hour, we were able to describe what it's like to experience a session and what it's like to engage with the training processes that you provide.
Sure. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, you're more on point with grounding me than I am. So thank you, Chance.
Well, I can see the clock. I'm just, you know, we're talking about all this time stuff and I'm like, oh, look at the time. We're going to return to these ideas though. I think that we're just cracking the lid off of it. It's
regardless fun. Of the transcendent feature of reality, we are in this time thing and the clock continues to tick regardless. Right. We looked around, Christabel Armsden is the other founder of Field Dynamics. We looked around going back 5 years ago is when we started, and we really were building up the backbone to it the couple of years prior to that as well. We looked around and said, whoa, the world of energy healing tends to be more confused than not. And also, we don't really see the offerings out there to be very professional and very, very comprehensive. So a lot of the time people were doing things where they would go in and do something for a day or two or three, and that would be the totality of their training. Now, on one level, you can certainly learn a technique in that amount of time. How well you can learn the technique is obviously a question, but you certainly can only do a limited amount of self-transformation or the healing work required in that amount of time. So generally speaking, when people get involved in doing healing work, being a facilitator of sorts or a space holder, the number one thing you have to do if you're interested in doing that kind of work for other people is you have to do your own work. Because if you haven't developed the space in yourself, if you haven't gone through a process in yourself of depth, you're not going to take other people into depth in themselves either. It just works like that. So the priority is always your self practice and your self work, much more so than working on other people in terms of the foundation and really the obligation that's appropriate when you're going to get involved in facilitation work for others. So we looked around and we said, okay, how can we structure something that enables that in terms of the time or the depth? And furthermore, how can we take the energy healing world, the modalities that exist now in terms of the kind of the dynamism and the potency of the tools and show that this can be much, much, much broader than people realize? And that was the inception of Field Dynamics. And we created a format that we've been running now for 3 years regularly. We basically started running this course in 2020, and we call it the EHT program. And there's a 100-hour and then a following 100-hour, both of which online are 6 months long. And what we do is take people through module by module, like live and online is how we've mostly done it, although we're going to start in 2024 next year. We have scheduled for the first time in-person version of this in Bali. So the 6 months will be 24 days, in fact. But the course is structured such that it's 8 different weekends, and we come together for a weekend. We learn new tools. We do group energy healing work so that those tools are applied to people's systems. They learn about it both theoretically and experientially. They go through the healing process and the therapeutic benefits of experiencing those things and getting exposed to those depths and aspects within their energy system. They have a few weeks off to engage with their self-practice. We have these very clearly designed protocols to go through to work the tools into your system more and get used to them. And then they also do partner trades with other people. So 3 weeks off, come back for another weekend, 3 weeks off, come back for another weekend. And that goes on for 6 months. And that's the EHT 100. And that recipe has proven to be extremely effective working with a small group of people. It's usually just Christabel and myself and a maximum of 12 other people. So it's a small group. There's a lot of intimacy and personal attendance to people's needs and sharing, et cetera. To see that people both learn the depth of what energy healing can be, in that the menu is not, hey, here are like 2 or 3 frequencies or a couple things to do, but rather here is a significantly larger menu than you're used to, because we keep deepening where we go in terms of the anatomy or the issues we work on in the system and the therapeutic benefits of going through that process over that long period of time. So that's the training structure, the primary thing that we offer. We have this other 100 hours that follows that. We call it 200, and that's like where people can get certified. We call it an advanced course. And many people who do the initial 100 hours go on to do the 200. So they spend anywhere from a minimum of a year to about 2 years going through that program. Now that to us was like, that's the kind of thing that we'd like to have experienced ourselves when learning to work with subtle energy, because your self-healing is so important. Your learning of the technical skills of doing it take quite a lot of work. And it gives you enough time to integrate between those two, have enough exposure and experience to walk out of it going, right, that's more akin to what we're used to in our academic world of doing something like a master's degree somewhere. You know, you spend about 18 to 24 months in the master's program. It's similar in terms of the amount of time spent, not the literal hours in class, but the amount of time in general, the window of life that you give over to your study in progress. So that's the training that we have. We do have a 10-hour course, a foundations course with people to give them a taste of what we do and give them a toolkit to work with energy healing in a very functional way. But we consider that a stepping stone course to do the longer course in terms of what we really find to be what we like the most and what we find to have the most benefit for people long-term. So those are the courses. One-on-one, before I say that, actually, one thing to mention is Field Dynamics is based on a universal approach to energy healing. This is really, really important as well to our inception. There are two kind of main mission and values things that I should say. One is that it's universal. So for instance, I'm going to use Reiki. Reiki is wonderful, but I'm going to use it as an example because it's a good reference point. Reiki is a proprietary energy healing approach, meaning when you practice Reiki, you're just practicing Reiki. And when you use a Reiki symbol or an energy from Reiki, it's just Reiki. It's within a container. It's like a proprietary in that sense, okay? Field dynamics is completely different. It's universal in nature, meaning everything we teach is based on your understanding and teaching what the mechanics of how this all works, and then showing you how simple information can be used to create energy healing tools, which then are given out as like a menu of how you practice, but that you can create tools and that you can be as creative and technically adept as you can possibly understand based on your own creativity, imagination, and your know-how. So it's completely different. It's like being handed an operating system like Apple or a PC, like OS system, which is fully formatted and you can't change that from the ground up. That's like Reiki, it's proprietary. We teach something that's more like Linux, where you can 100% engineer things from the ground up because you understand the nuts and bolts of it. So it is entirely freeing, number one, to people who want to take their artistry, their creativity, and their unique kind of healing talents into any domain that they're interested in. And secondly, that there's no dogmatism there. Like, it's not us giving something to you that you can't have because this was impossible beforehand because it's a proprietary thing that, you know, is like within this box. It's just, it's a universal understanding of how this works. So that's really important to us, that that is one of the points or the, I don't want to say the ethics, but the improvement over what we saw as most modalities, taking a much more proprietary approach over how this works. Okay. Number
right,
two,
it has to be a certain way.
Sorry.
I want to just tack on there. What you're describing makes a lot of sense to me. And I'll add, that's kind of my approach as well, that I didn't learn a proprietary system. I learned the mechanics of how our energy, our biofield works. And then knowing what it is and its anatomy and how to interact with it, I then began to creatively figure out ways to do the thing that I do. So, and there's no training involved. My process is actually constantly refining, evolving, improving as I realize ways that I can do so. And it is a creative thing. So I wanted to ask, while we're on this point, could you maybe give an example of how, well, you say simple information can be used to create energy healing tools. Mm-hmm. What do you have any examples that come to mind of what that might look like or how an individual would have done that?
Sure. I mean, there's a little bit of a cat out of the bag kind of thing when you explain the raw mechanics of it, but it's important that there's more and more transparency and clarity about this. I said to you at the beginning, your aura is a reflection of what's happening mentally, which means that thoughts are things. Every thought is actually a thing, okay? So what that means is that the formation in your field is based on the information you're interacting with, right? So in Reiki, for instance, the mechanics would go something like, there's a certain kind of, usually what's referred to as like a higher consciousness. Reiki communities tend to refer to something like universal consciousness. So there would be an invocation, an intention connected to that higher consciousness or universal consciousness to activate a symbol. That's how Reiki works. So there would be like a symbol given out. And when you activate or visualize that symbol, what you would see mechanically in the person's field is that a certain frequency would start to circulate in their field if you could just see it like completely clearly, okay? But that's actually what's happening with every single thing that you think. So if you think apples, when you think apples, apples has a frequency. There's an information, there's information in the transcendent sense, right? If you like read it on a piece of paper, there's the information of what apples are. But there's also a resonance. There's a vibrational characteristic of what apples is as a general apple. And then there's like what a specific apple, and you can get more and more refined, right? Just like the idea of playing a C on a piano is the note C, but there's also a violin playing the note C, right? But they sound completely different, right? But
it's the still platonic, it's platonic forms and ideals. The difference between the idea of a chair that's universal and the actual individual chair that you're sitting in that is unique.
Yeah. So, yeah, right. So there's this whole thing about the confluence of information and energy. And in fact, there are some interesting studies that are showing that there's a convertibility between energy and information. There's this weird stuff, this interesting stuff that's been done in Japan, that when you introduce information, the energy state of a system changes, right? So yes, the language you're using is there's something like an idealized form, which we might start to talk about as being outside of time and space. And once that idealized form is interacted with through a sentient being or through consciousness, then it actually starts to create motion. And that's the difference between in science and physics, they would use this, although it's not applied in this way, potential energy and kinetic energy. So potential energy is something that exists as a potential, like the rock at the top of a hill has the potential energy that if you push it off the hill, it goes down the hill and then it becomes kinetic once it moves, right? So the informational level is this potential, if you will, but once it's activated, like in the suggestion of Reiki, once you visualize the symbol or you intend for that frequency, it goes from potential, it goes from informational to energetic, meaning it starts to actually kinetically move through your system. But again, this is actually how all mental functioning is working. We don't realize that.
Can I ask another question? Is this convertibility of information to energy and energy to information, is that in some way explanatory to the phenomenon that you can draw a tarot card and that information reflects the energy that is present? Like the energy becomes the information if there's a vehicle for it. You see what I mean?
I'm not sure, but there's something, I mean, tarot works a lot with archetypes, and there's something about working with archetypal systems in which you're relying on the universality of the representation of something, which then as a reflection automatically form fits the system you're having it interact with. So it's not a matter of what card comes out, but rather what does that card mean to you? And then the meaning is inherent in that, if that makes sense.
We might have to expand on that later.
Sure. Okay. So that's how things work in that general sense, right? Another way of thinking about this is that we now have, I created a term called cosmemetics. Because I've written a first book, I'm looking for a publisher right now. And one of the things that I put forward in the book is this field of science yet unborn called cosmemetics. And we might be aware of something called biomimetics. And biomimetics has to do with biomimicry, where we look in nature and we say, what are the ways in which nature is designed? And then can we make technology based on nature's design? So what cosmemetics is it's an expansion of that and says we should be looking at how the universe is designed and creating technology based on that. But what I think is that what is happening, what 21st century technology is the advent of cosmemetics, i.e. the internet, fiber optics, search engines, etc. Because what a search engine shows us, we all understand this now. If I go and I Google something and I type in apples in the search engine, what happens? I connect to all these different ways of looking at the information based in apples, right? But this is literally a mimic. It's like a reflection at a lower level of representation of what's happening mentally with everything that's going on with every thought that we have, conscious or unconscious thoughts. We're literally plugging into the Akashic field, if you will, the memory field of the universe that is fundamentally non-local. And that means that you can retrieve any information, anything you think plugs into all of the associated information of that thing. Okay. So energy healing works with this principle. And what field dynamics is and different is that none of the energies that we work with are proprietary. For instance, it means like that if you said that compassion is something that is valuable to you, and you would like to get more in touch with the quality of compassion, well, compassion is a thought form. There's a qualitative frequency vibrational characteristic to compassion itself, and you can bring in the energy of compassion if you know how to activate that, if you know how to access that in a way that's most robust. The thing that's different than just general thought and energy work is that energy works brings in higher consciousness and an understanding of the engineering of change in the most potent manner. That's the difference between just thinking about something or having positive affirmations or dreaming or hoping that something happens versus classical energy work. Classical energy work is where you actually work shamanistically, you work magically, you work with intention and invocation, in which you actually access levels of consciousness that are beyond the personality to then take that information and circulate that through your system in particular ways. And it's much more powerful than when you do it at a personality level. In fact, it doesn't really work unless you learn how to work like that. So that's how we differentiate ourselves, is we have this universality of approach, which means that once you start to understand the nuts and bolts of it, you yourself can start to format things yourself. And we see that with certain practitioners, but we do a good job of giving people a whole lot to chew on and work on before they might be tempted to start, you know, exploring so much. There's plenty to work on with the with the curriculum that we have.
It's great, man. I've honestly never seen anything like it in terms of the training philosophy that you've got and the breadth of marriage between the spiritual and the scientific. Really good stuff. Remind people where they can find everything that you're up to and what you'd like them to know about.
Yeah. So our website is fielddynamicshealing.com. That's our name with the word healing at the end and .com. I think what you said is what our aspiration is. We really do think that we have been successful thus far in birthing something that really doesn't exist right now. I don't want to say it's better than other things, because that's not the idea. It's not about being better than. It's that the way in which this has been designed and birthed is something that is extremely clean, extremely non-dogmatic, extremely universal, and weds and has the language and is grounded in a way that really can move forward the conversation about what is this thing called energy work, which is not something new, which is something that is extremely ancient. You mentioned mystery schools earlier, and that's one of the big words or communities that would have been working in this way. Why was it called a mystery school? It's because basically in those traditions, people would be spiritual aspirants for a long period of time. They'd go through different initiations and trainings, et cetera. And at a certain point, they'd go, hey, more or less, they'd go, hey, come into the back room. We're gonna tell you something really important. And you go, what? They're like, guess what? Guess what? Things don't work how you think that they work. Here's the mystery. And the mystery fundamentally is to tell a person that they are creating the reality that they're thinking into reality. Fundamentally, that mind is the thing that's creating all of this. And once you actually understand ways to engineer your intentions and thoughts to empower those to a higher degree, then you can start to create in a way that is much more powerful than you were previously. And energy work harnesses that mechanistic understanding to create healing and change instantaneously in your field. So if people are interested in doing this kind of work, we have the courses that I mentioned. We also do one-on-one work. So I work one-on-one with people a lot. Christabel does as well. And people tend to reflect on it and say it's extremely transformative to their life. And we have a training coming up in February of 2024, the next DHT 100. We have the in-person in Bali, which is the same course, but 24 days instead of 6 months. And we advocate for people who, you know, if anybody's listening to this and they're interested, of course, check out the site, potentially sign up, reach out to us. We always do consultations with people because we have small groups. We don't know what will happen if we start having groups of 50 people ever interested in, you know, being in the cohorts one-on-one. Right now, we have really limited the amount of seats that we have in each class because we want that teacher-student ratio or that attendance so that every person can be has the ability to share entirely, because that's a big piece of this, is sharing what your own experiences as you're learning to do this practice. This touches into extrasensory perception and psychic development, et cetera. There's no one path within that. So people really need to express their inner experiences out to other people to share and to understand how holistic healing actually works. If people want to have a consultation with myself or Christabel, we're always happy to do so.
Good stuff, man. We're going to take our break. Really glad we were having this conversation, though. There's a lot on the table. I'm so excited to come back. Yeah. So we'll see everyone on the other side. Thanks, Keith.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the outro. I often say that this podcast, Innerverse, is the deep end. It's not for the entry level. It's not the 101 conversation. But man, was that proven true with today's episode. Keith Parker, people. This guy, he actually reached out to me, and I think maybe through my involvement with Eileen McCusick is how he found out about me. I had not heard of his work before, and a lot of times I'm more investigative before I have somebody on, but then other times I just go with my instinct. And when I saw Keith's website and how he described what he was doing, just at a glance, I got the full body 100% hell yes, let's talk to Keith. And that was a while ago. So it's kind of been, there's been some time since then. And I just knew this was going to be a good one. And here it was. I have so much to learn from this guy. I admit that in this conversation, I am realizing some of my own self-imposed limitations, that particularly the realm of science and my general perspective on scientism, the religious, dogmatic, idolatrous aspect of science, or it's not really science, but like how people interface with the egregore that they call science, the science trademark, that I've kind of limited my looking into those realms. Now, that being said, we can only look at so much at a time or over time. And I've had my finger on the pulse of some pretty awesome stuff, particularly in the symbolic studies. Guys, before I go further, have you been checking out our Marvelous Demystifiers side series, my other show? Because I know that the view counts on that is a little lower than other content, but let me tell you, the quality of those podcasts is on another level compared to most of the content. If you like most of what I do here and you're not checking that out, let me just tell you, the Loki series, covering the Loki TV series, has been some of the deepest, hyperstitious, incredible, syncretic smorgasbord that you could ever ask for. And I think a good 50% or more of the people that are attending the live stream for that and paying attention to that series never even watched the TV show or knew anything about it. So getting that out of the way first, you don't actually have to care about comic book movies or Marvel or whatever it is that we're talking about. You don't even need to have seen it. We walk through the symbolism, but also the plot in a step-by-step, screenshot-by-screenshot way, so that you're not going to get lost as to what we're talking about. But what you will get is a great overview of the keys to the symbolic system of the mystery schools as they existed in ancient times and how they are represented now. And the whole time you're getting this delicious tickle of asking the question, did these writers and producers of this TV show or this movie know all of this symbolism and what it connects to and how perfectly syncretized their entire production is to the correspondences of occultism? Or is this something archetypal coming through the one mind expressing itself to us through the medium of this collective creative output? I think after talking to Keith today, I sway from day to day, but today I'm leaning towards the side of this is the one life expressing itself through the medium of creativity, of human creativity. So anyway, just wanted to make sure you guys know about that series, the Marvelous Demystifier series. It's one of the most fun things I've been up to for a while. And in fact, it's been so fun, but also so engaging and engrossing. It's a lot of work for me to prepare those shows that there haven't been as many Interverse episodes for a while. November, I guess, and beginning of December, I've kind of skipped over Interverse to do that series, and now we've completed the first season of Loki, so I'm going to take a little break. Your regularly scheduled Interverse episodes are going to come back, including the free hour and the plus extension, like we've done in the past, like we've always done. That's not going away. I just needed a little wiggle room to complete that project, or at least the first half of it. And I'm glad that I did, because it was a lot of fun. But that being said, it's been a while since I asked you to subscribe on Rockfin or Patreon, because I've been doing all this content for free, loads and loads and mountains of free content. So I'd really appreciate some support back from you guys. I know that what I need will come in when I need it. but someone out there listening, the sound of my voice is one of those people that's going to provide me a little bit of what I need at the right time for when I need it. You can check out patreon.com/interverse or rockfin.com/interverse. Those are both great ways to support the podcast if you're not already doing so. And by signing up, you'll get access to the entire archive of everything I've ever put out, all of the extensions, all of the second hours that are paywalled, including the second hour and I don't know, about hour 15. It was an extra long one, extra juicy one with Keith. The second part we talked about, man, as I read through these notes from the Plus extension, you're going to laugh. The dendritic mystery, like the fractal dendritic pattern of everything. We talked about hyperstition and continually confronting the edges of what you believe. The self, its relationship to time, transcendental idealism of Immanuel Kant, theosophy, and the mystery of the ring past not. That kind of rhymed. I didn't even mean to. We also talked about how the universe of infinite diversity can emerge from something infinitely identical. That one's really going to bake your noodle. It's one and zero, right? Eternally, it's yin and yang forever. How does that give infinite variation? We get into it. And in fact, it's actually just 0000000. It's all the same thing. Anyway, we also talked about the mind and aura as an analog or equivalent to time. The question of, is AI really possible? We reverse engineered identity from the I am. We questioned why there's a something instead of nothing. We got Keith's experiential take on what is entity attachment? What, not as much about what he sees, although I think there was, he didn't describe it per se, but what he's aware of and why it's there. And most importantly, why you shouldn't be scared of demons or entities or what have you. We discussed the presence of holographic ancestors, accessing plasmastral planes. I made that up because according to Keith, the astral plane is accessed through the heart chakra or generated by the heart chakra, and it's a realm of plasma. So if it's astral and it's plasma, I'm calling it plasmastral. That's my neologism for the day. There you go. But fascinatingly enough, when he started talking about the plasma astral plane, we were at the end of 2 hours, but I realized he's describing something that happened to me. I went there. I had a spontaneous bleeding over of the astral plane to the physical reality in 2019. And talking with Keith for the extra 15 minutes at the end, he helped me understand just what it was that happened to me. Or I'm going to go with what it was, the way he described it. You got to listen, because this experience totally changed my life in so many ways. And I feel like I recapitulated a lot of maybe like FOMO or regret that came out of how that experience ended, or I chose to end it, by talking to Keith today and realizing just how much has changed for me since I had that experience in 2019. So all in all, a great Plus extension and altogether excellent podcast start to finish. There's a lot of things I'm going to be tracking down from what Keith brought up, especially that amplituhedron. The structure that the Hadron Collider has allegedly found outside of space and time. Whoa. That's one of those things where I'm like, maybe I'm ignoring science a little too much. Maybe there's something, some good gravy in there. I'm going to dig in. And I think I'm going to dig in through the vehicle of the Field Dynamics podcast with Keith. I think that that'll be what I do. I'm going to put that in my circuit, start listening to that show. I'm excited for what I'm going to learn. I'm excited to learn some new stuff again, instead of kind of digging deeper on stuff I feel like I already know well. It's going to give me a lot to work with as a host and as a, I don't know, teacher, whatever I do here, researcher. What am I? Who am I? That should be the title of this episode. Who am I? For 2 hours. Good stuff, though. As always, if you want to schedule a energy healing session with me, Biofield Tuning, you just got to send me an email, chance@interversepodcast.com. And you can check out interversepodcast.com /sound-healing if you want to learn more about the process, see some links to some videos where I talked about biofield tuning. Had really great results with people lately. I have permission to use this testimonial I got from Joel Rafidi. Joel is one of the hosts of Here for the Truth podcast. Great show. He's a great guy. Had a good tuning with him a while back. And he says to me, my biofield tuning session with Chance felt like a gentle reclamation of power to the most subtle parts of my energy field. Chance was able to swiftly assess where and why certain blockages might be occurring in my field. And with his unique blend of tarot and tuning forks, allow homeostasis and fullness to return. Well said, concise, great testimonial. Thank you, Joel. I mean, that guy's got a podcast called Here for the Truth. So obviously he's telling the truth about what a great tuning he got. You know, you want to do one. It's fun and it's effective. It's safe and effective. Trust me. A lot more safe and effective than a lot of other things that get that label. Lord. But other ways to support the show, innerversepodcast.com is going to have all kinds of links to stuff, including, well, actually better to go to the description of the episode you're watching. And there's a support Innerverse section. You can go to the merch store. That's innerversemerch.com. Include, you can get this t-shirt that I'm wearing right here. I made this shirt. I didn't physically, I didn't make it, but I designed it. This is the Heart Chakra Astral Realm Activation Superpower t-shirt. Get you one. Also got puzzles and hats and mugs and hoodies and all kinds of great stuff. So get some merch. You can also get Tippecanoe Herbs products with the Innerverse coupon code 10% off. I use them all the time. Here's my memory enhancing tincture. Here's my flow state hydrosol. I didn't even use that one today, though. I was just on. I felt like I didn't have to do much to be in a flow state. Keith just took over. He's every guest, like, or every host dream guest. Gotta say, thanks again, Keith. Big up. Major professional. So, I think that's all I want to tell you. Love that you're here. Love that you're on this wave, in this dance of this field dynamics conversation. So conversation is old as time, as old as the most ancient of mysteries. It's the mystery of mysteries. What is this field and what are its dynamics? I'm going to play you guys out with a song from a new LP from Acid Cats. I am not endorsing the usage of acid. I don't think they are either, but a couple of guys that I'm friends with, their musical monikers, Lucid and Flintwick, respectively, they have formed a super group and finally recorded an album. And oh my gosh, it's like all I want to listen to lately. It's so good. So I'm going to play one called Dusty Wagons off of the Acid Cats with a Z LP. Hope you like it. Check the show notes for a link to that and everything else I've talked about. And I hope that you're feeling really good out there about life, the universe, and everything, and that you trust the moment that you need some kind of breakthrough experience to shake you out of what it is you're no longer satisfied with. Trust me, it'll come. It'll come right when it needs to come, how it needs to come. And you're in the realm of where dreams and wishes come true. I'm not even being corny about that. This is the place where wishes come true. So just make sure that you're wishing for the thing that you really want so that you don't lose track of who you really are. And I'll catch you guys on the flip. Much love. Bye-bye.